Good morning. Welcome to Community Focus, a show dedicated to exploring the personalities, issues, and events of interest to southeastern Wisconsin. I'm your host, Matt Nye. Our guest today is Pamela Wilson. Pamela is author of the book, The Caregiving Trap, as well as a care advocate, as well as founder of her own company. Pamela, thank you so much for joining us today.
Matt, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Now, caregiver, that is a term that probably has multiple meanings and multiple interpretations. How do you define someone who's a caregiver?
I define it very broadly. A caregiver really is anybody that takes care of another person. So it's a mom taking care of a child. It's a child, adult child, taking care of a parent or a grandparent or even a spouse or a brother or a sister. It's anybody that really helps provide any type of assistance to another person that's relative to what I call daily living and health. And so that could be taking somebody to a doctor appointment. It could be as simple as making a meal for somebody.
In terms of your stereotypical caregiver, what is that age that most people turn to your expertise or pick up your book?
You know, anywhere between 30 and 50, because mostly it's adult children who are starting to see concerns with grandparents or with their aging parents. And they're thrust into this role. It's not anything that people plan for. It happens because of a health emergency. And they're like, oh, my gosh, I'm a caregiver. What do I do? And what am I even, you know, how do I plan for this?
I know you had a personal journey that sort of led you to the interest in this field. Can you talk a little bit about your mother or your experiences and really getting a sense of what caregiving was early on?
Absolutely. So when I was young, I had a social work scholarship. I was 17 years old, and I had a scholarship that I didn't take. My oldest sister was killed in a car accident, and I saw the way that that affected my parents, and it was almost tragic because they're like, oh, my gosh, we're never supposed to lose children. And then when I was in my 30s, my own parents started having health issues. I was the baby, so I was the youngest of six. And my mom was in her late 60s, and she started having heart problems. And so there was a lot of trips to the doctor, trips to the emergency room, things like that. And unfortunately, she died at 69. I was 35 years old, and my father was 12 years older, so she passed away. And then my father started having some health issues, and he died a couple years later. My oldest brother, coincidentally, came home from my father's funeral and was diagnosed with leukemia. And he passed away 6 months later. So it was a hard time, I'll admit that. But all of that experience, you know, looking back, had I known what I know today, I probably would have done things a lot differently. But back then, you don't know who to ask. You don't know that there's help with any of this caregiving stuff. And so, honestly, we made some mistakes that, knowing what I know today, I probably would have done things a little differently.
Before we talk about the person receiving the care, let's really focus on the person actually giving the care. You had this tragic experience that you just had to deal with, and certainly people were depending on you. How do you process that early on? You mentioned before that I wish I knew then what I know now. What was going through your mind, or what were you dealing with early on in finding yourself now in the role of caregiver?
You know, we were naive. I had, there were six of us kids. One of them had already passed away. College educated, you know, master's degrees, all of that. We thought we knew what we were doing. What we didn't do was we didn't ask questions. So the doctor would say, well, you know, this is the diagnosis. We'd be like, okay. What we didn't think to ask was, well, if there's surgery, what's the prognosis? Is this life-threatening? You know, my mom, when she had her surgery, said, I don't ever want to go to a nursing home. So we let her come home. A nursing home would have been ideal because she would have gotten the medical care that she needed there. But, you know, she had drilled it into our heads, children, you never put me in a nursing home. And I think it's because back then, you know, the ideas of the nursing homes in the teens and the 20s, they were institutions that were horrible. And that's very different today. So we kind of were going by, you know, what my mom told us, and we didn't think to ask the doctors questions. That's kind of where we made mistakes. We just didn't know what questions to ask. And I had a sister who was a nurse. we were just naive. We were thinking, oh, it's all going to work out. Mom's not going to die. Dad's not going to die. Life will go on.
Your second chapter of your book really talks about that process of taking off the rose-colored glasses. I can't imagine how much of a paradigm shift it is now to really have caregiving be a huge part of your life. How did you, and now knowing what you know now, how does a person manage that stress?
A lot of caregivers don't know how to manage the stress. When I first started doing this, I would lose sleep over my clients because I would be like, oh my God, what's going to happen if I'm not there? What's going to happen if I'm not there to answer the questions? And for caregivers, it's really putting things in perspective and making sure that you have support. So whether it's hiring a care advocate, whether it's going to a support group and talking to other people about the process, or even just joining an online support group, it's important to know that you're not in this by yourself and that people know more than you do, that there are resources that can help. That is huge. And the other thing is taking a break. A lot of caregivers caregive 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and you don't mentally or physically get away from caregiving. You have to take a break, whether it's just to go see a movie or have lunch with a friend or go to the gym. You've got to be able to find support, and you have to be able to get away.
So for you, what was that shift that you finally said, I can't do it all by myself, I need support, and where did you go for that initial support?
So for me, it was things like going to the gym to get away. And for the support, I continued my education. So I am a national certified guardian. I'm a certified senior advisor. I have a certificate in gerontology. So for my profession, it was becoming more educated so that I could help other people and not be so stressed about what I didn't know. And so now doing this for 16 years, as you might imagine, I've had a lot of different experiences and just have worked through a lot of different situations and helped families. So, you know, today I'm much different than I was 16 years ago. So relating that back to a family member, again, it's find resources, become educated, find somebody to help you. The more you feel like you know and the more you feel like you're in control, the less stress you experience.
Halfway through your book, you talk about the next chapter, and it's funny because I think we know there are some life-defining talks we have to have, the birds and the bees talk, but there is another, in quotes, talk we have to have. Can you explain the talk and how we go through that process?
Absolutely. So the talk that we have when we're adult children with our parents really is, if something happens, what would you want? And those were conversations that we didn't have with my parents. So it's kind of like, Mom or Dad, when you get sick or if something happens to you, what do you want? Do you want to have care at home? Is an assisted living an option? And then it's the harder talks about, have you saved money? Do you have money to pay for care? And as time goes on, the talks get a little more difficult because they may be about memory loss. It may be, gosh, Mom or Dad, you're getting forgetful. Maybe we should go to the doctor and see if you have dementia or Alzheimer's. And those words scare people to death. The other hard talks are giving up the car keys. You know, there are some older people that should not be driving because of memory loss or poor reflexes or they've had car accidents. So it's hard as a child to have these talks with your parents because, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, I didn't want my parents to be talking to me about anything when I was in my teens. I'm like, you know, don't tell me how to drive. I don't want to know about this. I'm a kid. I know everything. Well, in the reverse, the parents are going to be saying to the kids, well, you're our kids. Who are you to talk to us about this? So you have to find ways to have those conversations from a very caring perspective, saying, hey, I want to talk about this because I love you, not that I want to tell you what to do with your life.
In terms of where we have gone, obviously, I mean, the fact that there are books on the topic, the fact that, again, the certifications that you mentioned, the resources are out there. Where were we in terms of when you first went through putting on that hat of caregiver, and where are we now in terms of what is available to us?
You know, we are light years. My parents have been gone for 20 years. So when I think back, you know, 20 years ago, there weren't even care agencies that had companions that come into the home. That was kind of just coming on the forefront. Now people can hire caregivers to come into the home. We didn't talk about caregiving back then. You know, there wasn't a lot of talk about long-term care insurance or health issues or any of that back 20 years ago. Today we're much further ahead, but we're still not where we need to be because this whole aspect of caregiving for parents isn't talked about. Caregiving for children is, raising children, you know, school, college, all of that. We're not a society that likes to talk about end of life. And somehow we've got to get more comfortable about that because we're all going to get there. We're all going to need care.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Pamela Wilson. She is author of The Caregiving Trap, Solutions for Life's Unexpected Changes. As we make those transitions, as we have that talk with our parents, how do we use technology or other new methods to be able to manage the fact that our duties, it seems, are constant, our need to multitask is constant, to have that double income if we're raising a family? How can we go ahead and manage that with some of the innovations that exist today and also be an effective caregiver?
There are a lot of very good technological innovations today. Some of them might be seen, as I call it, a little big brother-ish. But, you know, to that end, there are cameras, believe it or not, that you can put in a home if your parents live 2,000 miles away that can detect movement. So if your parents don't get up in the morning by 10 o'clock and they're normally up at 7, you can receive an advice saying, you know, you might want to call your parents. There's no movement in that house this morning. There are electronic medication boxes. So a lot of times parents will be forgetful to take meds. There's med boxes that pills can be dispensed in, and they go off with a timer. There are, you know, I recommend people put up private websites or private Facebook pages. To, if there's a family team and there's six kids, you know, the kids can go onto the website and say, hey, this is what I'm doing for mom and dad this weekend. You know, can one of you guys do this? So it kind of helps the team effort of we're all over the country. You know, I'm going to call mom and dad every Friday at noon. What can you do? And, you know, in addition, there's other things. There's the fall monitors that you frequently hear about on TV where you press the button, you know, I fall and I can't get up. There's really a lot of technology out there to help caregivers at a distance.
So what are the things that even for your own children, before you're even at that caregiving stage, that we can do before we even need to go ahead and be a recipient of care?
You know, I think it's important to talk to children about caregiving regardless of what age they are. One of the cool things that my mom did for me that I think back now that back then I didn't even think about it was, you know, my grandfather died when I was 5 or 6. She took me to his funeral. She would, after that, then take me to all the older family members in the family, and she was a caregiver. She would take food. She would take meals. She would openly talk to me about this. And, you know, back then I had no idea what she was doing. I was a kid. I just heard it. But I think, you know, the interesting thing is by the time most of us are 50 today, we haven't lost anybody. There hasn't been a death. So whether it's talking about death of pets or death of grandparents or the fact that we get old, just exposing children to that in a positive manner, you know, taking them to volunteer at a nursing home, I think we need that exposure so that when we age and we become a caregiver for our parents, we're not so shocked. It's like, oh my gosh, how did this happen? It's part of life.
So this is sort of a tough aspect of caregiving. There is so many emotions swirling around when that is a need. And siblings, potentially, or children of the person in need might not always see eye to eye. In the most innocent form of this, maybe there's a slight disagreement on how some time should be spent. On the most extreme version of this disagreement and how to caregive, there might even be some elder abuse going on. How do we navigate that really potent emotions that might have a negative effect on our caregiving?
You know, it's tough because what happens is when our parents age and we become caregivers, and let's say there's multiple kids, all the kid stuff that happened when we were young, who got the Barbie doll, who got the train set, who got the car keys, that all comes back. And so the way that I talk about trying to put it in perspective is to have family meetings or family calls and be honest and say, look, you know, I can't be a caregiver for mom and dad right now. I can give money, or I can be a caregiver. And if there are serious disagreements, to be able to talk to those either with like a care advisor, so someone like me to come in and say, hey, you know, what are the issues? Let's talk through these. Let's be practical, if the family can't do that themselves. And sometimes there are issues of elder abuse. You know, sometimes one child is appointed power of attorney and they are spending mom and dad's money unwisely. Unfortunately, in those situations, you know, I usually recommend contacting Adult Protective Services, who can come in and investigate to see if there really are issues, you know, before it has to go to any type of legal action. But, you know, the honest truth is a lot of families don't get along. And they'll come to us and they'll be embarrassed about that. And I say, don't be embarrassed. It's so common that, you know, when children move away and have different lives, everybody has different perspectives on how a parent should be cared for.
So let's say we're struggling through that whole process of taking on our new roles, and I'm looking to take care of mom or dad, and my siblings and I were struggling. What are some of the first steps we can take in that process?
So it's usually identifying roles and what people can do and what people can't do. So sometimes, you know, let's say that there's a sibling that just got married and, you know, they're having kids and they're having career issues. They may not be able to participate in caregiving at all. And so the family has to be realistic and say, you know what, Mary, I know that you can't do anything right now. You know, at least be involved in these conversations so that you know what's going on. And then see if other siblings can take different roles. So like for my parents, I did a lot of the financial stuff. I did the income taxes. I had a sister who was there who could go to doctor appointments. I had another sister who was very handy, so she would come home and do home repairs. So it's kind of like, what are the strengths of the people in the family and who can do what at what time? And again, depending on life situations, you know, you may be involved one year and not as involved the next.
In terms of the cost of caregiving, I would imagine that initially a lot of people would be reluctant to come to someone like you, thinking, you know, services would be very expensive. I need to save things up. I don't know how long mom and dad are going to be with us, how high their medical bills are. I guess two questions there. What should we plan ahead for in terms of the real cost? And what are the best bang for our buck in terms of a little money spent with a lot of gain?
So I'll answer that one first. So a lot of people will call us and they just want to come and talk for an hour. So my fee to talk for an hour is $125. And what I ask people to do is bring me all the information and I can go through all the care scenarios. So costs of care at home. If you have a home caregiver, on average it's $25 an hour. What a small assisted living cost, depending on part of the country, $3,000 to $4,000 a month. Larger assisted livings, $7,000 to $10,000 a month. Nursing care is more expensive. So I take people through all of the scenarios and also provide a lot of resources that people commonly don't think of. So, you know, there's transportation for people that don't drive. There's special cognitive therapy for people with memory loss. So I serve as a resource, and then we help families after that with as little or as much as they want. So some families will come to us and say, you know, I can afford $150 a month. How can you help us? Other families are like, we just want you to do it all. We don't care what we have to pay you. So in planning for the future, let's say that you're a child in your 30s or 40s, I seriously recommend looking at long-term care insurance. You know, it's on average, if you're young, it's no more than your car insurance every year. And the benefit is when you're older, it will pay for in-home care, it'll pay for in assisted living, it will pay for nursing care. It's a huge support because a lot of people don't have a lot of money when they retire, and care is very expensive to the tune of, again, $10,000 to $15,000 a month. If you have a long-term care insurance policy, you can get that care and it's paid for.
So the way you describe it, that seems like common sense, and yet a lot of people aren't even aware that long-term care insurance even exists. Why is it that we feel this urgency to go ahead and insure our homes and our cars, and we don't really give that much thought to our long-term health.
You know, I don't think because it's talked about commonly. You know, we all know that we should have car insurance. We should have homeowners insurance. But again, we don't talk about our health, and we never think we're going to get sick, and we never think we're going to die. So a lot of people will look at a long-term care insurance policy when they're 30 and say, oh my gosh, I'm not going to use this until I'm 70. Why would I pay for 40 years? Well, the benefit of paying for 40 years is at age 30, your premium is pretty low. And it's an optional policy. So let's say you don't take it, you don't try to get one until you're 50, and you're diabetic, and you have heart disease, and you have all these other diagnoses. Your premium is going to be rated, and it's going to be extremely high because you have health issues. So it's better to get it when you're young and you're healthy than to wait. You know, you can wait till 50 and pay for it for 20 years if you can get it, but in those 20 years, you probably pay more than you did in the other 40.
So unfortunately, we just have enough time just for a couple more questions. First, Pamela, where can we go to find out more information about your book or everything that we talked about here today?
So two websites. My business website is thecarenavigator.com, and that will kind of tell you about all the services and everything that we consult on, and I do phone consultations. The book is available at thecaregivingtrapbook.com. There's information there about the book. There's videos. You can go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, all the major booksellers, and find it.
Final question. So we'll take you through a little hypothetical here.
Okay.
You mentioned early on in the interview that you wish you knew then what you know now. So let's take you, build our time machine, and send current you back in time to former you. Former you is stressed, young, naive, and has no idea what is ahead of her. And you are there sitting across from former you. What do you say to yourself, and how do you get yourself started on the right track?
So I'll be specific and use my mom's example. My conversation to myself would be, have you talked to the doctor? Have you got a list of all of her medical information, her diagnosis? Do you truly know what the diagnosis is and what the effects on her life are? Because had I known that, I could have been more proactive, going to doctor appointments, asking the right questions, and especially when she had surgery. So she was a smoker all of her life. She had bladder cancer, and she had to have surgery. But prior to that, she'd had a bypass, all these other health issues. I would have had a serious discussion with the doctor to say, okay, what's going to happen? Is she even going to survive surgery? And if she does, what do we particularly have to be attentive to after the surgery? I would have sent her to a rehab. She got sepsis and she died at home. That probably could have been handled if she would have been at rehab.
And in terms of, in general, what would, and I think you touched on this early, but just to repeat it again, what would be your advice to that general person that finds themselves now wearing the hat of caregiver for the first time?
So again, become as educated as you can. Go to support groups, join online support groups, find a care advocate like myself if you have no idea what the options are, because it's so important to educate yourself and know what the options are rather than have an unfortunate situation happen and then a lot of those options are no longer available because you're in crisis mode.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap things up. Today, we've been talking with Pamela Wilson. She is a caregiving advocate and author of the book, The Caregiving Trap: Solutions for Life's Unexpected Changes. Pamela, thank you so much for coming on today.
Matt, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And that will do it today for Community Focus. This is Matt and I wishing you all the very best in Burlington and beyond.